Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good friend and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
Going really well. This has been a fun week or 10 days. Last week being in Wilmington, North Carolina, opening up our new studio, and then this week going out to the CEO Council.
That's right.
And then I think next week maybe we get the new Buckhead studio up and running. So we got a lot going on in our world, but there's a lot happening in the learning world,
That's
too.
Right.
So we're going to bring back to the microphone Leanne Langford with our underwriter training pros. How about you? What's happening with you?
Well, we're going to Leanne right now?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Leanne. Well, yeah, jump. I thought he was...
sounded like he was
I'm done with you.
He was looking at me.
Okay.
So there's a lot going on in the learning world. December's a really busy month. A lot of projects are winding down for the year, but at the same time, there's a lot of different initiatives and celebrations going on. Last night, I was at the big ASTD meeting, well over 100 people there, big dinner, the whole bit, and they were honoring all the volunteers for the chapter, and then also they were honoring the people who were champions of learning for Employee Learning Week, and you guys have heard about that. In the past.
Right.
And I'm proud to announce Training Pros got recognized as a champion of learning.
All right.
For our big initiative we do every year in the summer called Consultant Appreciation Month. And you'll remember that. We had some consultants
That's
here
right.
to as part of the showcase for consultants. So very happy about that.
Well, that's fantastic news. And did you saw, I think, the Chief Learning Officer magazine, our buddy Rob Lauber, right?
Yes, we saw that, Rob Lauber. And then three of our clients won the ASTD Best Award this year, and two of them were featured last night at the event on a panel discussion. So a lot of award-winning. And, of course, we have a guest here who's also got an award-winning training department, learning department, so we get to hear about her.
All right, well, let's bring her into the conversation. We have with us Director of Global Learning and Development with Manhattan Associates. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Miss Stephanie Crow. How you doing?
Thanks so much. Well, it's great to be here. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, we're delighted to have you. Let's hear about your award. You're award-winning, too?
We are, actually. We won six awards this last year. One, our sort of penultimate one, was the Brandon Hall Award. We're absolutely excited about. We also won an Omni and a Best Communicator Horizon Award and a Stevie. So we're pretty excited about that and the impact we're making with our learning at our organization.
Now, are these awards for effort, or is there some actual, you have to have proof that what you were doing was effective?
That's a great question. Yeah, no E for effort. these are not actually awards for the evaluation phase, which really your ASTD Best and Top Training 100 or 125 awards are really about. These are... almost taken cold, can you experience a learning experience, in this case they were online learning, and really have a learning outcome? And what I love about it is imagining these folks who aren't our target audience taking our e-learning and now, in the case of supply chain fundamentals, which is our business, becoming supply chain experts. I just love that there's an Academy of Visual Arts person somewhere who now knows supply chain.
Now, before we go too deep in this, can you share a little bit about Manhattan Associates, what you guys are doing?
Of course. So we deliver solutions in the supply chain commerce arena, which are technology and implementation services to enable global supply chains. And this is really helping our customers balance their profit and their performance across their demand and supply networks.
Right.
Really part of the omnichannel revolution.
And so you have offices all over the world?
We do. And customers all over the world as well.
And the offices are aligned with the customers?
Absolutely. So we're regionally based, so each region has represents our customers in that region, but we also have global customers that are sort of cross-represented.
And when you're doing training, so it has to make sense all over the world, or you customize the training in each, for each culture?
Yeah, I would say we try to be as global as possible. And so from a global learning perspective, take into account all of the needs from a design, delivery, and outcomes perspective and align those as best as possible. Certainly, we have localization, particularly for clients, where it's going to be in their language. But we try to represent all of the design needs when we're designing courseware.
So were you a supply chain person that really found a home in learning, or you've been a learning person and you've really found a home in supply chain? What's your backstory?
That's a great question. I would like to say that I'm more of a business person that found my ROI in learning. Now, I do have some supply chain in my background. I started out in the sort of consulting track and doing implementations in supply chain, and quickly found that the way we worked ourselves out of doing that knowledge transfer on a project, when I moved on to other organizations, the way we got sales impact, the way we got operational impact, was to implement truly impactful learning programming. So that was really my aha, was discovering the way we get out of a project and the way the client really gets to know and use their software, their new processes, gets the benefits that they really want to realize from any change in their organization is related to the learning.
So now you mentioned ROI. How do you kind of build an ROI for learning?
Well, that's a great, so I would say ROI for learning is the same as ROI for anything else. And that's maybe a bit of a departure from your standard instructional approach.
Right.
ROI is return on investment. So you're putting in money, time, and energy, and what you want to get out is results. How you measure those results really has a lot to do with what kind of impact you're trying to make. So if you're trying to impact revenue, then you're going to measure revenue and you're going to go after impacting revenue. If you're going after productivity or revenue per FTE, full-time equivalent FTE, you're going to want to go after that. So really it depends on what you're trying to do, and that's how you know what your ROI potential is going to
be. So you're looking at ROI from the minute you have this assignment of what as soon as you have the objective, then you're looking at it through a prism of ROI, not just the learning, right?
Absolutely. So I think I would like to, if it's okay, reorient the wording a little bit. So I don't like getting assignments from the business.
Okay, so what language do you use?
I like giving a diagnosis to the business.
Okay.
So the way you really get ROI out of learning is
give me a real example.
Okay, so I go for where the pain is.
Okay.
Right? I go straight for the pain.
So now, but let's bubble this up. What, somebody says we have pain somewhere.
Yes, absolutely.
So give me
they're having a conversation in the middle of a meeting and just shaking their heads because, the billability or utilization of services professionals is not at the rate where they want it to be.
Okay,
that's
so
pain.
So somebody, they, who is they?
Could be any executive, any leader, anywhere, and this is how you get business acumen as a learning professional, right? Anywhere people are talking about how they do their business, you prod, you diagnose, you learn more about it, and you discover where the pain is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So now they have this pain. They go to you, hey, we have this pain. Fix it. Right?
Right. In some way. So, I have this pain. You know, it's like going to the doctor.
Right.
I have this pain. Now, the doctor's not going to open up their cabinet and say, well, I have a bevy of pharmaceuticals for you to choose from. Right. Which one would you like today?
Right.
They're going to say, tell me a little bit more about what triggered this pain. Where did it come from? What are you doing to cause it or to alleviate it? Where do you think it came from? Help me understand more about the factors around it. What else is going on? So essentially, you're going through a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And that's really, it's needs analysis, right? It's at the beginning. But essentially, you got to understand the factors because, you know, if you give somebody a cookie and an aspirin and say, come back tomorrow, it's not necessarily going to, it might make them feel better for a little while.
Right. And you think, high five, we did it. But then the next day, they're back to where they were or worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you've ignored that there's that pain is for a reason.
Right.
And you have to really solve the originating problem. So that's where you get that big ROI. You kind of dig into it and you figure out where is that pain coming from and how can I solve that pain?
Right, because a lot of times just because you can measure something, it doesn't mean that that's the right thing that you should be looking at. That might just be the easiest thing to measure.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. And I think people measure what's easy to measure, what they're accustomed to measuring, what they're neighboring company is measuring because
right.
somebody
this
else is
measuring.
This is
what everybody measures, so that surely, must be what we should be measuring.
Surely we must be measuring it, yes.
Right.
And I think that happens in learning too. Gosh, it's just too hard to really tie that. But you know what? People really enjoyed the event. Or people had fun.
Right. The surveys say we got fives.
Smiles. So, right. All smiles.
So
yeah.
We're doing a great job.
Absolutely. Which it's not, that's not bad. It's just not going to get you your ROI.
Right.
And you can put all sorts of really extraordinary, and I think it's fantastic when people put extraordinary instructional design to make learning events and experiences and knowledge transfers into something that's engaging and impactful and memorable and really sticks with people. And
right.
You have to choose the learning challenges that are going to get you that ROI. So if you've just taught somebody how to effectively clean their desk, it's not really going to get them to the point where they're more productive by the end of the day. It's maybe a part of it. They may be excited about it. They may have loved the really fun interactive exercise you did for it. But it's not the program that's going to get you there.
So can you really put, I don't know what the term is, qualitative variables in the ROI equation, like as a result of this experience, this learning experience, I now have a great deal more confidence in my leadership? Is there a way to get that in the ROI calculator?
That's a great question. I would say confidence and the intangibles are something you're going to want to get perceptions and opinions about. And there's some great research, I wish I could directly source it, but that says essentially managers can estimate really well. So if you've been in the business long enough, doing what you're doing, 80% of the time you're going to guess the right answer in terms of your area of expertise, your area of responsibility. So if you ask, for example, somebody's manager, are they performing more effectively? Do you have increased confidence with these folks? You can track those numbers. Mm-hmm. But I would never put a whole program off of that perception or intangible-based factor. I think that will give you more confidence that your program is doing what it needs to be doing. But at the same time, it's more of a backup. I think you need to say, look, the real tangible factor of this is our customer retention will go up. Our employee retention will go up. Our promotability of managers to leaders will go up. Those are all things that you can track. And there may be some of those that are trailing indicators and some of those that are leading indicators. So I like to pick the leading indicator because that mm-hmm. one is going to tell me how I'm going to do. I don't always like to know how I did as much as I like how I'm going to do.
Now, do you or the organization have an ROI discipline? Like it's important in these kinds of learning opportunities that we get, I don't know, our money back or 100% or 2X, or do you have specific disciplines across some of these categories?
We do more of a, I wouldn't say it's as strict of a discipline as you're describing, but we have sort of a tiered approach. So if we're going to spend over a certain amount of money, time, effort, and by the way, time of subject matter experts is one of our most critical resources as an organization. If we're going to do that, then I have to prove, or the learning advisor has to prove, that 10 times ROI is there even before we begin.
10?
10 times.
So that's wow. Just, it has to show 10 times or else.
Can you talk to my broker?
Or you don't do it. That's wow. That's a disqualifying effort. If it's like five times, you're like, you know what? You have to rethink this to get it up to 10, or we have to go a different direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A different direction, I think, is the really good answer. It doesn't mean that it ought not to be done at all. It just may mean we're approaching this thing the wrong way.
Right.
Because if everything takes 100 hours of effort and money and energy, then you're just, what I hear somebody say recently, you're peanut butter spreading all of your effort. Right. So essentially what you can do then is say, this is a good thing to do. It's not the thing I want to spend my most money and most effort and most time
on. It helps you prioritize.
Absolutely. So, and yeah, I will, I think brokers should expect a little bit more out of that 10
yeah,
times
no
ROI,
kidding.
Right? They're expecting maybe 30% added on per year. That's a pretty good number, like for a VC or an investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not the stock market average. I know I've got some people, big gulps, looking at me here. But this is where learning is sometimes the biggest lever you have, the biggest multiplier you have in an organization and with outside your organization with vendors, with customers, with distribution partners, and the like. So essentially, if something is not going to hit that 10 times ROI bar, we look at alternatives. One alternative might be what we are joyfully calling the quick flip right now. Okay, so let me give you an example of this. We have a new product release process. We're a software technology company. Every year, we release a full range of cross-integrated products across the supply chain.
And these are brand new products, or they're like updates to existing products?
Upgrades, right? Okay. Every year, you get the new products released. Sure. Some of them are new as well. But everyone in the organization needs to know what's in it.
That's a good idea, right?
How to configure it, what are the benefits, and how to administer it, particularly when they're implementing with our clients. So, but there's a time challenge here. The developers and the R&D folks know at the time of release, and then they're focused on the next release. 3 months later, after the sales guys have done their thing and sold it to clients, that's when some of the professional services organization are ready to hear about it. 6 to 9 months later, sometimes even 2 years later, unlikely, but you know, sometime later, the customer support organization is ready to hear about it. Mm-hmm. Those R&D folks who are the owners of the knowledge, they've moved on.
Right, that was yesterday's news.
Absolutely, they're no longer focused on that release. So what we do is at the moment of knowledge capture, we do a lot of really good instructional design. Here's how we want you to deliver. Here's some toolkit and approaches, and they deliver it at the moment they have it.
When it's the freshest.
And then we record it.
Right.
And then we do the quick flip. We use folks from Training Pros, little plug there for you.
Thank you.
And they take that video and they convert it. It's all organized by topic matter. Folks can review it. Maybe they weren't here in Atlanta at our corporate location when it was released as well. So folks who are globally all over the world developing and delivering our services can review it. We had an individual in Europe review a video the night before showing up at the client site. Now, granted, he was an expert already in the former release, but didn't know how to configure the next release. Learned it, turned around, showed up as an expert at the client the next day. And he said, this is exactly what I needed and when I needed it.
And then this was something that was recorded months prior to that.
Absolutely.
Right.
So the ROI on that is phenomenal, right? The moment of need, and we're delivering talent readiness, right? That talent is ready when it needs to be ready, and they show up as an expert with the client.
Execs must love talking with you. I would think they would be a lot quicker to allocate resources when they hear things framed up and viewed through this prism of ROI. Tell us about getting the rest of your team to communicate like this, particularly with the sponsors that they need to speak with in the organization, because that's a leadership obligation of yours, right? To get them thinking and acting like you.
Sure. And the way I think of it is really in line with the conversation that's been raging for some time about learning professionals and training professionals having more business acumen. Mm. We can't be experts in everything that everyone else in the organization is experts in. That's why they're the SMEs and we're not. At the same time, having business acumen about what's important and how to translate or convey what we're doing and the kind of impact it's going to make is exactly something we're capable of doing. So using the business terms, speaking in terms of learning outcomes, not the activities we're going to do, not how we're going to do it, not throwing in a bunch of fun terms that are training specific, like modalities and asynchronous and all that fun stuff, which I love to do, and we could do that for a while. But essentially, speaking from the terms of your audience, which is the business leader, they speak in terms of what's my ROI, what's my utilization, what's my revenue per FTE, what's my customer referenceability, how am I going to deliver those things through these people.
Now, when you have this 10 times ROI discipline, does that discipline kind of trickle down to your vendors as well? Is that a level of expectation you expect across the board?
It is. It becomes our common terminology. I have now jokingly gotten labeled as ROI is my middle name.
But how'd you come up with 10 times as opposed to 8 times or 11 times?
I discovered it. It was already there and I discovered it. The first time I discovered it, I was working, looking at the customer education program for a hardware and software manufacturer who delivered through distribution channels. So this is a few roles ago for me. But essentially what we were trying to do was figure out, gosh, we know we need to be training. And we know it's good. We know it's important to do, but we don't know how good. And quite honestly, in this case, because we didn't sell directly to customers, we sold through distribution channels, it made sense for us. And for many years, we had delivered training complimentary. So this was just unbelievable in the industry. You're giving training away for free. But there was a good reason behind it. We just needed the numbers. Now, I'm sure you've had some other folks speak before about having baselines for metrics before you begin a program. This was an inherited program for me. So I broke out the statistical analysis and we ran a statistical regression on this programming. And we found that individuals and customers who had been in training within the next 3 to 12 months bought more of the products and services they had just been trained on how to use, how to implement, and how to support.
Right.
We're not surprised by this, but what we found was the connection was so strong that if you calculated what we were spending on training, the revenue we were producing out of those folks sitting in the classroom was 10 times what we were spending on the training program.
Right. So then it just becomes math now, right?
It's
more
math.
Training, 10 times more revenue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It made complete sense. And we could then say, you knew it was good and you had your gut, but here's the math. And you know, I love math because it absolutely guides where you're going, not justifies, but helps you explain and identify very real factors and logical factors about why it gut feels right.
So revenue makes perfect sense. What else should we be measuring in this ROI calculator that I mentioned? What else should we be throwing in there besides revenue, maybe?
You know what? I throw it all in. Yeah. And it really depends on the program and the audience you're targeting, what you're trying to do. So, you know, if it's an R&D organization you're working with, you're going to be looking at the number and percentage of software defects because they want to reduce their defects because that means less rework and less corrections. That means they can get speed to delivery of their next release faster. If you're working with a services organization, they're going to be absolutely focused on the number of hours of billability and utilization. They are absolutely going to be hours focused. Someone who's in a customer support or client services organization is going to be all about issue resolution time. How long does a call take? So each of these different business units and audiences, our clients, our customers want to know go live readiness. What's our speed to go live readiness? What's the percentage of the users who are going to be using our software? And when are they going to be ready? How quickly can we get them ready? What's the percentage of the users who are ready? By what criteria? So it really depends on what you're trying to do. So unfortunately, there's no one metric, but it really does depend on what you're trying to do.
And it's certainly helpful for you to have the business acumen to have the right frame of reference to appreciate this information. But I'm getting the idea that it's perfectly appropriate to engage SMEs in these different disciplines and ask them, what should we be folding into this equation, right? Because they'll tell you stuff that maybe you didn't know about.
Sure. And you know, I want to be realistic here because it depends on your level of SME.
Right.
So I think we use the word SME pretty flexibly in the learning field. And I would say that I would more likely say the stakeholder is going to tell you what they care about, not necessarily the SME. The thing I always say about SMEs is they are absolutely experts in their content. So they know everything about their content. They are inspired by their content. And so they are going to wax on forever and ever on everything about their content.
And their thing should be 80% of the equation, if you ask them, right?
Exactly.
I get what you're saying. No, it's the stakeholder that's the, yeah.
The stakeholder is going to tell you what they care about, and the audience is going to tell you what they care about. So really, I think of it as more like a Venn diagram. Where do these things cross over? The content expertise with the stakeholder's pain and the audience's what's in it for them? What do they care about?
Right, but you have to spend a lot of time. It's not at a glance you can tell this. You have to really peel back the layers to get to the heart of it. Otherwise, you're going to be aiming this at the wrong thing. And even if you get 10 times, it might be 10 times the ROI of something that really isn't the most important thing.
Yes, you can build an absolutely beautiful course or a really fantastic
experience. Right, and we're all shaking our
head
and it all makes sense here in the room. But then when you drill down to really the pain, where the pain is, you haven't really solved that.
You get a miss.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you spend a lot of time really digging in this, don't you?
I do.
Because you have to get it aimed correctly or else it's kind of a waste.
Yes. I would say that you almost could do it all the time. Right. So you are all the time listening. Now, there is some ROI or return or leverage multiplier effect you can get based on the audience you're focused on. So any given audience is always going to have a leading metric or two or three. Okay. So when you know your audience, you can continue to assess, for example, in a services organization, they're focused on the hours. How many hours am I going to give them back if I take 4 hours in a training delivery? And that was one of my examples. I wanted to offer a week worth of project management training because everybody said they needed project management training. And so naturally we said, okay, we need a week to deliver project management methodology and right. how to run projects. Stakeholder said, I'll give you half a day.
Well, because if you're 40 hours, if that's what a week is in your world, then it has to deliver 400 hours worth of return.
For each person
in the room.
Wow.
Yes. So, but think then about 4 hours. I can give you 40 hours back the next year. In fact, I'm sure I've given you more because the way we designed it was in those 4 hours, I am going to slam exactly the worst, most impactful, most leveraged challenges that you experience in your environment in that 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And we're going to work through and experience and simulate how you solve those problems. And you're going to walk out of here with a whole tool set and you're going to prevent those problems happening next year. So essentially, you probably have more than if a project manager has a team of 5 to 10 to 20 people on any given project, you multiply that by all their people too. So we're way over 10 times ROI on that, but I'll claim 10 times ROI on that any day.
But in serving these audiences, and of course you're dealing with all these global constituencies, you have to think through all kinds of things, and they impact, again, this equation, like the medium. Some of this may need to be delivered by video or e-learning. In some cases, it might make sense to do stand-up training. Do you employ all these things?
Absolutely. I think you want to fit the method to the need. And now I've always been a person who says, if it can be e-learning, do it in e-learning because it's so much easier to consume globally.
Right.
And there are so many more ways nowadays to have truly impactful e-learning. Our award-winning Supply Chain Fundamentals course is an interactive challenge-based series of games that the people play. And they try to optimize a supply chain. So it's really, you're interacting. You couldn't interact with a supply chain any day of the week anyway in an instructor-led classroom. So you can do something in e-learning that you couldn't possibly do in an instructor-led format.
Now, have you ever found an instance where maybe the ROI in one country is great in a typical, in one kind of method, and then you take the same method and go, oh, that works great, so let's roll it out here in a different, you know, part of the world, and then they get a much worse or better. Do you ever see that disparate results?
Absolutely. And I think we sometimes target specific regions because we know that it'll be harder. The supply chain course, we knew it would be harder in remote regions where you just don't get a square mile size distribution center to walk through and experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there are distribution centers with some of our clients who, when they built the distribution center, it's so large, like more than a mile, and they had to take into account the curvature of the earth to build the design for the distribution center, right? So, but that's in the U.S., right? So if you're in another region, let's say I heard about a design that was really interesting being done in Hong Kong. There's a distribution center, probably more than one, quite a few distribution centers in Hong Kong. They're not a mile long. their high.
Right, their go up.
Yeah, so they have to figure out, technology and process-wise, how do I check things into the elevator and back out of the elevator and track things when they're in the elevator,
right,
not in the elevator.
Which is completely different than the one here that goes over a mile.
Completely different, right. Absolutely. So different dynamics, but still being able to physically experience it may not be possible, in which case you also have that alternate mode of delivery that you might say, hey, I need them to experience it, hear it, interact with it, but maybe they can't touch it and sort of be there.
I really like the analogy that you drew at the top of the conversation of diagnosing and then providing a solution. Can you walk us through one or two programs or projects and maybe just kind of give us an overview of what you saw, the diagnosis, and kind of how it unfolded?
Sure, absolutely. So I told you a little bit about the Project Management Challenges course, where we build that 4 hours to give somebody a real return on at least 40 hours for the coming year, and then don't even start on the perpetuity number. It's pretty good. So then the way we diagnosed that challenge, it was actually this executive stakeholder had been visiting many projects, and he came back with really a penciled list saying, hey guys, looks like we could use some help in these areas. And he had a list for go-lives and a list for projects, and handed it over to us. Can you solve this problem? And our learning advisor proceeded, and I love this because this is such a great use of subject matter experts. Our learning advisor, by the name of John Mills, in our services organization, pulled together all of the project managers. What he did was he said, come when you can. These are the challenges we're going to address. Pick the ones that you feel you address the best or have really good examples of how you're dealing with this challenge. And it was a good 24 different subject matter experts across 6 different challenges. They showed up. We had really good sort of information gathering instructional design sessions where we said, give me an example of the problem. How do you solve it? When does it occur? What's the best way of dealing with it? And we just went round and round and round with each of these challenges and then flipped that later. So this was literally a half hour of these people's time. That's it. 30 minutes. And then flip that into this great toolkit and tool set that we could challenge the project managers with. It's even a game where they had to basically compete against other project managers and how they would solve those problems in an instructor-led format, and then really deliver the solution of the challenge. And we debriefed, of course, with folks who could say, hey, look, here's how you use these, and here's what we saw in terms of diagnosis and solving that problem. So that was one. I'll go a different direction with another, which I think is really interesting. We're now using a technical books and video online resource. What we found was with our really, really tough software development problems, it was taking a long time to research the absolute best solution. And we were getting these odd requests for $500 and $800 books. And they would ask for 5 to 7 of them. Different ones.
The same book? Oh, different books.
Different books, different resources on one thing. And I'm sure I will get teased on the example I use. But, you know, how does the Oracle 11G kernel interact with the Linux setup of the, when you're trying to do a GUI with Web 2.0 or something like that, something very specific that the developer's trying to solve that problem that has never been solved before. So he needs the cutting edge research, and he wants to see what is the theory and the background and the why and the bits of the different ways to approach the problem. So he actually doesn't need the entire $800 book.
Right, he needs 3 pages.
He needs 3 pages from it, from 10 different books or 5 different books, so he can compare and contrast them and make a good decision for moving forward. So we found Safari Books. Safari Books, we have found that we got a 20 times ROI on folks' time with Safari Books, because what they can do is they can automatically search all of these technical texts at once, compare these 5 different books, and come up with a solution. Just think of all the research time saved.
Right.
Say nothing about the procurement process of getting access to the book, when these folks might not all be in one region as well. So essentially, when we ask them, how much time did you spend on this type of research on a given week in the past? And it was 20 hours versus 1 hour.
Right, because you got to get the book, you got to dig through the book and find the thing. This way, you're just getting exactly what you want.
Yeah. And so when people say, hey, online books, I'm not talking about as nice as it is, you know, hey, a nice business book to kind of move my business forward. We absolutely went after a very specific challenge where there was pain in the organization and got great ROI out of that. So that was an interesting sort of go through the diagnosis, figure out where the real pain is, because just general business books, quite honestly, they needed the latest release. It wasn't even out there yet.
Right.
So this was a way to get that to them with that really high ROI.
Now, what's your personal best on ROI?
I'm not sure. I think it's probably
You're
around.
You're not sure? The numbers person doesn't know off the top of her head? It's not 87?
Yeah, I would say it's, I could back up 40 times. I suspect we've hit over 100 times ROI.
Wow.
But in terms of...
You don't
of
have a little post-it note with the number there that you're aiming at.
In the mirror.
Your holy grail number.
That would be looking backwards, and we're a forward-looking organization. Give me what's next.
Well, speaking of forward-looking, what's next for you? Where are you going to invest your time and energy in the coming year, you think?
Oh, okay. Well, we're really looking at how we're going to take this approach to our clients. Because we feel like this is a great methodology we're using with our employee audience.
Right, so you don't think it's just unique to your organization. You think it can be transferred.
We work with some top-tier organizations, supply chain leaders out there, and they expect this of us. So we're finding ways, uncovering ways that we had not previously been impacting from an ROI perspective, that when we do our client education and help them be more impactful with their implementations of our software, we have a program called Fast Track. And this was one of my examples that's sort of like we're still in the phase of pre-implementation of getting it out there for everyone. But I tell you, this message is on fire with folks. I've talked some really like brands that you would recognize no matter where you are on earth. And they want this ROI and they want to know that their users are ready. They want to know that their talent can perform the things that they need to perform. And they are expecting the ROI out of their supply chain change too. So in order to make that happen, the users have to be able to do it. The Fast Track program is a program where we would be brought in slightly before go live or deployment of a solution to figure out how to train end users, to help our clients train end users. And when we looked at it, it's actually based on a performance support tool that we sell to our clients and help them implement. And we were asking, why didn't you bring us in earlier? Why hadn't we been brought into the earlier conversation? So when we explained then, well, yes, you can use this performance support tool for just-in-time training and for e-learning. And by the way, if you step back, and I'll go backwards through a software implementation for you, if you step back to the testing phase, you could have used those scenarios that we captured for your learning for your test scripts and your standard operating procedures.
Exactly.
Oh, wait. If you had stepped back,
even back farther,
into your build phase and you had used these same captures that you've just done to validate that this is going to deliver what you asked to be delivered globally, by the way, share that around to your different global locations to make sure you have a global design. Wait. If you had stepped back even further into the design phase, this initial capture of the process you could have used to build a global design. Take a quick capture, share it with someone internationally and say, hey, is this going to work for you guys? Because we want to build a global design instead of carving out different solutions for different regions. This just makes eyes go wide and think, wow, now that... Was it five phases?
Mm-hmm.
That's five times what we could have had if we brought you in later. So that, I think, is a really good story about how you extend ROI when you really think about what is the business doing? What are they caring about? What are the measures that are going to get them the outcomes that they want to deliver to operate their business effectively?
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. Keep up the good work, and don't be a stranger. Come back. I mean, we got to visit about this topic again. There's so much that you're uncovering and discovering and that needs to be shared with others inside the organization and throughout the world, I think.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Thanks so much for having me.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our underwriters, training pros, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you next time on Learning Insights. Although we style, got supper.